So we enter into chapter 21, which is chapter 21 of book 1, which is the ascent of life. And one of the quotes there that Sri Aurobindo gives is about the three steps of Vishnu from the Rig Veda. But these three steps are not the Puranic legend of the three steps of Vishnu and Bali the king, but the three step which takes care of earth, heaven and the beyond. So the ascent of life is essentially that where it begins its journey, it comes from the divine consciousness force. It has come from the, it is divine in its origin, divine life principle. And then it enters into the form, and to start with it is lost in the form. So in the form, life exists as a sub-mental energy. Mind is there, but it's not. Without mind, there can be no form. And wherever there is mind, there is supermind. So everything is there, but life doesn't recognize itself as such, and we also don't recognize itself as life. But it's there as the energy, which is holding the atomic structure together. It maintains the movement, the exchange, the interchange as a force, or the different forces which are impacting the material universe. That's his business. Then slowly it begins to get released, and it gets released step by step. And in the first step of release, there is the law of hunger, and through this hunger it seeks to grow and progress. And yet, as it grows and progresses, it needs challenges from the world around, to which it has to adapt. But it cannot, you know, is somewhat we can say that a baby which is in the womb is living. Never say a mother that, you know, it's a piece of meat which is growing inside your body. Mothers don't like it because they already connect, it's a baby. The baby is alive. The baby does not know it is alive. I mean, to all cognizable experience. But it's alive. Life is there already. Then the baby is delivered. So there is the, that's why hunger is the first expression, even of love. Because before it learns about love, hunger. And the mother gives and the baby feeds and is satisfied. So first the law of hunger starts operating, and will go on operating for quite some time. Whatever the baby demands, parents supply. So the law of hunger is going very nicely. But then the baby goes into the world. Now it meets the challenge. Everybody is hungry. Everybody wants to affirm. So while in the house, you are the blue-eyed. Every child in the house is the blue-eyed boy or girl. And when it goes out into the world, now there are other lives, individualities. It doesn't know how to adapt. So for some time, there is hunger which continues. I must come first. Ambition, all this continues. But later on, as the child matures, and out of this kind of life, which is more the batch of animality, which is hunger, it continues in human beings as ambition, desires of various kinds. Then it begins to change. As mental life develops, it begins to change into love. So people with a developed mind understand instinctively. I'm not talking of developed mind has nothing to do with a postgraduate in Harvard University. Not at all. One may have studied outside, but the mind may be still the mind of the ape or the animal. So because unfortunately that's the way education system is built, that anybody with a little smartness or memory will succeed and reach there. But it means nothing from the point of view of the ascent of life. The true thinking, the intellectual mind in its true right, by nature begins to seek harmony, some principle of harmony, some principle of light. It understands that I must give if I have to receive. I can't just be taking, receiving. That's what we know, call as maturity. So who is a mature human being? Who understands it? That life is not just about devouring, taking, possessing, but also giving. So there is give and take. That's how the mind. And then it must go further, and that Sri Aurobindo will reveal in this chapter. So, but first these three. So first is the law of hunger, where life must affirm itself. It has its own basis. There is a reason, because evolution is on the basis of an individuality, and if individuality doesn't affirm itself, then there is a problem. It must affirm itself. And then on that firm footing, it starts giving. And it gives, but it has to give to a point where it doesn't thwart its own growth. In the beginning, it is like that. Later on, all this changes. So let me just read the first page, 211. The first terms of life are division, a force-driven subconscious will, apparent not as will but as dumb urge of physical energy, and the impotence of an inert subjection to the mechanical forces that govern the interchange between the form and its environment. And this is not just at the atomic level. These are powers of division. They are called as daityas. So that's why in Savitri we have a whole chapter, a whole canto on the mother of falsehood and, you know, these children of darkness and division. So their purpose is only to divide. They cannot think of anything else except their own affirmation. And how much ever you may try to tell them, they don't, because they are not evolved. So the way is, if a good number of human beings evolve to a point where they exert a pressure on this mass, unless we do it, they are daityas. So that's why they were called daityas, because they were children of Diti. So Aditi becomes Diti here. And these children of division, they care only about their own physical survival. They don't care about anything else. And they move as a crowd. So you see, it's like a movement which is without thought. Thoughtless, brainless. What we saw recently in Bengal. So it's a brainless movement. So this is the first law. It is daityas. Then the next is, but there comes a new equipoise, there intervenes a new set of terms which increase in proportion as life delivers itself out of this form and begins to evolve towards conscious mind. So form means many things. Form means skin color. Form means I belong to this region. Form means my language. Form means my state. It's an imprisoned state. State as state of consciousness. Where I can't be delivered from the form. But slowly life begins to come out and start experiencing things differently. A new equipoise. For the middle terms of life are death and mutual devouring, hunger and conscious desire, the sense of a limited room and capacity, and the struggle to increase, to expand, to conquer and to possess. These three terms are the basis of that status of evolution which the Darwinian theory first made plain to human knowledge. For the phenomenon of death involves in itself a struggle to survive. Since death is only the negative term in which life hides itself from itself and tempts its own positive being to seek for immortality. So this is the first law of life, which through the three steps. Then, last two lines on this page. This struggle for life is not only a struggle to survive, it is also a struggle for possession and perfection. Now, but initially the survival must be secured. Otherwise, it'll keep struggling for survival. But when basic survival needs are taken care of, then it seeks to progress, strive towards perfection. So one of the things that mother says, why she created, because a lot of people said, and she understood that we have to struggle even to somehow manage our life. And if these things are not there, we don't have to worry about these basic needs, then we can take to spiritual evolution. And the mother says that when I had an opportunity somewhere in the middle of what is called as the middle of my life, I created a space. One reason why this came up, the ashram, one reason, not the sole reason, is that people can live here and they can, their needs are taken care of. So there is a place to stay, there is food to eat, and very decent, I must say. I mean, I have seen ashrams, this kind of where you are given a decent place to stay and given by the ashram. It's not like you have bought it and you have told that this property bequeathed to the ashram. You are given by the ashram. and you have food which is nice, clean, hygienic food, and your basic necessities are taken care of. So she says, okay, provided it. But she says that, however, I have realized that this is not the problem. So she says, because there is freedom, it tends to become licentiousness. Okay, now basic necessities are provided. So now we don't have to struggle. Let me enjoy life. Enjoy, not in enjoy sense, but whatever it is, licentiousness, I can do anything. And because everything is provided, there is inertia. Why should I progress? Because everything is provided. And then she says, I am waiting to be proved otherwise. Of course, she says that it's not that everybody, but this is not the real issue. So when everything is provided, there is inertia. So that's why the law of struggle is still there in humanity, and we cannot stop it by providing free clothing, free food, and because it will take away the evolutionary possibility. Wherever you do it, then people, that energy is there, they become aggressive, violent, they start killing others, all kinds of things happen, as in typical Marxist, communist countries, because now basic needs are apparently provided, and therefore, but those energies are there, life energies of division, they are operating still at that level. They have not evolved through the natural struggle. So they are used for asserting in every direction. But as the mind comes, there is the need for progress and perfection. So in the ashram, we see that there are several opportunities even for intellectual progress. These, you know, evening teaching classes and all, and then ultimately the ultimate progress, the divine. So it's organized in that way towards perfection. And equally, is it true? So, after 3-4 lines. Okay, we can read. Since only by taking hold of the environment, whether more or less, from the top, page 212, whether by self-adaptation to it or by adapting it to oneself, either by accepting and conciliating it or by conquering and changing it, can survival be secured? So that's why people who used to come to ashram, the first thing that all the wise people said, spend 1 year in just having your rooted here, because it's a totally new thing, and you know, the life which wants to, it has come from a different background, it wants to assert, affirm, but here you don't have. If you say I am doctor so and so, somebody will say I don't care, what will you do? So you can't get. Because here it's a different way, the logic doesn't operate. You can't say you don't know who I am. Outside you can say, I am wing commander so and so. The other person will say, what wing? You don't have wings. What commander? No. So like our friend Major General, who came here, and everybody used to call him Major, because people used to think general is not a good word, general category. And he said, see what has come of me. They don't know that Major General is a very high rank. So they would remove general and call him Major Saab, Major Saab. So, you know, you have to now the life has to adapt. So he adapted. But somebody may not adapt. He wants to affirm. Oh, you don't know who I am. Oh, you don't know who I am. So after some time, you'll be thrown out. Nobody has to throw you out. You will go out because you have not learned the higher law. That now, that higher law is the law of love and association. So that he will come later. So by accepting and conciliating it, or by conquering and changing it. Conquer you cannot, because everybody is mother's child. Okay. Can survival be secured? And equally, is it true that only a greater and greater perfection can assure a continuous permanence, a lasting survival? So this is how it operates here. Outside, it's like conquering. You can say, wouldn't use the word, but keep quiet, but in a more loud way, person who is. Here you say, the other person say, acha, humko bolega. He will shout back at you, and you won't know where to stand. So here that law doesn't operate, because everybody is given the freedom. So you have to learn a new way. Relearn. So that's how there is this. It's automatically evolutionary. In ashram, you just stay for 5 years, you will evolve. The system will make you evolve. You don't have to do anything. Just to be around, you learn to adapt, you learn to accept, embrace. That's the only way to grow, because otherwise, it doesn't. Of course, some people know it instinctively, so it works very well. It is this truth that Darwinians sought to express in the formula of the survival of the fittest. But fittest is not only by conquering, fittest is also by adapting. So this is where fittest is not just devouring, fittest is also how you adapt to the change. So that's what is important. Then he says that then almost in the middle of page 212, now it tries to assert itself, but precisely because the struggle for survival, the impulse towards permanence, it's there in human consciousness, in life, because it is permanent. It is not destroyed. It's an energy. You can't destroy energy. Some fools think that they can destroy Shakti. It's just not possible. You can destroy form. You cannot destroy energy. You can change from one form of energy to another. Energy by its nature cannot be destroyed. Only form can be destroyed. Form can be built and form is destroyed. But energy is energy. You can't destroy. And in fact, the sum total balance of energy in the creation is kept a constant. Very interesting, in spite of the positive entropy. That means it's evolving. It's amazing how the destruction of form and the balance of energy is maintained in this cosmos. Very difficult work. Only Vishnu Bhagavan can do it. So still, but it seeks permanence. This is a challenge. So how do you do permanence? Precisely because the struggle for survival, the impulse towards permanence, is contradicted by the law of death. The individual life is compelled and used to secure permanence rather for its specie than for itself. That is the impulse. Ab ye impulse, this impulse can go to any extent. First is santan. Literally it means extension of my being. So child and progeny, that was the reason why people wanted a child. These are all ignorant things, but we have to understand the mechanism. We can't just rubbish them away. They are steps and stages. And at another level, it can go to any extent that if not me, then main rahun ya na rahun, ye desh rehna chahiye. What is it like? Even if I fall and die, the country must live. Or sacrifice. That's how the law of sacrifice eventually emerges for humanity. So these are the steps, as Sri Aurobindo says. There are three steps of Vishnu. One is family. Second is nation. And the third is humanity. And you can't abrogate one. If you destroy one, then you can't leap. People who have only the sense of family and no sense of country become extremely selfish. So you have to go through that stage, middle term, and then you adapt to the whole humanity. So these are the evolutionary steps. So it seeks it, but this it cannot do without the cooperation of others. And the principle of cooperative and mutual help, the desire of others, the desire of the wife, the child, the friend and helper, the associated group, the practice of association, of conscious joining and interchange are the seeds out of which flowers the principle of love. If you destroy family sense, if you destroy the sense of nationality, that means you are actually destroying love at its core. You can make a slogan, all humanity is one, everybody is free, whatever. But where does a child learn love to give? It's in the family. And then from family he goes to group. My people, my family. Then he evolves further and thinks about nation. Larger group. And then he goes further. That's why Sangham is so important. It's a training to learn to love, to give, and not just think only of oneself. And such a Sangha, which is a divine family. These are the steps through which one has to move. So, principle of association, which flowers, out of which flowers the principle of love. Let us grant that at first love may only be an extended selfishness, and that this aspect of extended selfishness may persist and dominate, as it does still persist and dominates in higher stages of the evolution, Still, as mind evolves and more finds itself, it comes by the experience of life and love and mutual help to perceive that the natural individual is a minor term of being and exists by the universal. So in the initial stages, my family, only my people, my caste, my creed. So don't think of my language, my state. In the initial stages like that. And slowly one begins to reach out. One understands that everything is interconnected. You can't have a state cut off from all the others. It's foolish. It won't even thrive. Because it has to enter into interchange with all that is around it. Life can't thrive like that. So that's why the moment family comes, one thing that family life teaches is that don't be selfish. People who cut off from the family prematurely and they think that I am not interested, I don't care. It's not that you find the divine immediately. I mean, odd person apart. But the general law is that if you do that prematurely, the seed of love that gets stifled, the sense of association, of mutual help, you don't learn that. So ultimately you become extremely selfish. An experience when one goes through life and its different vicissitudes, one develops. And this is something which one can see in life itself. That those, when you go through, because you learn that you have to give. You just can't be always demanding. A child can demand everything from parent. But the moment one marries, then one realizes that one has to learn to give and one receives. Or one engages in friendship, one realizes. And then when you have a child, then so there is no way. You have to not only give to the child, you have to ensure its survival. How do you ensure? Because now it's not your survival, you are that child. That child's survival is your survival. So how do you do it? You have to perforce make friends with everybody. You can't just say, I don't care about my neighbors, because the child has to move out and everybody associates with everybody. That's how one begins to learn and grow in life. So these are stages. So he says in the beginning it is selfishness, but what happens later? That there is a growing experience and we begin to understand that we are part of the universal. I cannot, you know, just think only of myself and my family. Like in India, this has been one of the problems that, you know, as the mother said, that it is selfishness that has been the ruin of India. Because we just kept towards myself, my protection, my family. Forget about everything else. But what we don't realize, if we do that, you won't survive tomorrow. Because if today you think it's not my problem. Why? Because problem is in the 10th house. My house is 5th house. Okay. Tomorrow it will be 9th house. You say, no, it is still not mine. Then it's the house next door. Okay, I'll shut my doors. It will knock at your door. So if we don't understand this, if we think I am safe, you're not safe. It is that larger sense should always be there. Your safety lies. I mean, if the earth survives, then we all survive. It can't be just me and myself. So this is something through evolution one learns. And then what happens? Once this is discovered, as it is inevitably discovered by man, the mental being, his destiny is determined. When we begin to understand that we are neither alone in the universe, nor we live only for ourselves, as the mind develops. Now, mind is developed means first the mind is subservient to life. Then this mind doesn't help us. It becomes a accomplished to this inferior law of life. So there are people who become doctors. Looks like a noble profession. But I know during Corona people made their own houses and hospitals. Still subservient to the law of life. It is only when you grow beyond a point, then you begin to understand that whatever I have received from the divine, and you know, I should give freely to the divine. But that initial stage is there. But slowly you begin to, that man, when he begins to discover that I am not alone, just me, my family, then what happens? Then the destiny is determined. For he has reached the point at which mind can begin to open to the truth that there is something beyond itself. See, this coming out of the selfish state. Otherwise, even God is only for myself. People often say, why did mother punish me? Why did mother do this? Are she's looking after the whole creation. But why? Because a selfish person will think there also. Why she didn't give me, she gave to somebody else. It can go to any extent. But when you come out, when you understand, then what one would aspire? It doesn't matter whether I have the experience, I have this or not. But mother's work should be done. This world should become divine. That will be the spontaneous aspiration. That I will have this experience, I will become supramental. All this will become so such a meaningless thing. It is the divine mother's work that this earth and creation should become divine. So this is the logical way. So once we have begun to feel like that, then there is something beyond itself. From that moment, his evolution, however obscure and slow, towards that superior something, towards spirit, towards supermind, towards supermanhood is inevitably predetermined. So that's where is the cutoff point. Before that, man is a product of the mass. Selfish person, life will wipe away. Why? Because all life, this is struggle. It's a cat and mouse game. Darwin's first law. So you may feel sorry, but it doesn't matter because life will operate at that level, challenge you, knock you, hit you. Then suddenly, like recently, all these incidents took place in Kolkata and people were asking. I say, see, it's a shame and a sadness and an irony that people wake up when such an extreme thing happens at your doorstep as if it had never happened earlier. And it has to happen in such a gory way. And even then, the impulse is, the doctors are doing strike. Doctors are involved in the incident. So it's not about doctors vis-a-vis. The nation should rise up. Such a thing are not acceptable. So this is how the awakening takes place through these incidents. Unfortunately, it is needs an Abhimanyu to make even Arjun feel convinced that Bhishma and Drona must go. This was the reason why Abhimanyu was sacrificed. Because though he is given the Gita, he understands he has to fight. But when it came to Bhishma, he had weapons actually. Though Bhishma had the Vardhan, he had the weapons. But he would not fire. Why? Because after all, TK, Krishna has said, right, but you know, after all, my grandson. But when Abhimanyu falls, that's when we see he understands. By the shock of it, right at your doorstep. So this is the unfortunate part. But the moment we conceive, there is something greater and beyond. And we live by that, then there is a destiny which is fixed, predetermined. Therefore, life is predestined by its own nature to a third status, a third set of terms of its self-expression. Because it will release, it is imprisoned, it's come from divine, it's slowly picking up the pace and releasing. Once you have the first flight which took place, Wright brothers, or well, there is another story. What was the name of the man? Talpade. Okay. Or much before that, Pushpak Viman. If you have once even the conception that man can fly, interstellar travel is inevitable. It's bound to happen. You can't stop it at one place. That's why the discovery of the wheel is considered a very fascinating discovery in, you know, because the moment you realize that there is wheel, so many things open up their doors. So he says the destiny is therefore life is predestined by its own nature to a third status, a third set of terms of its self-expression. If we examine this ascent of life, we shall see that the last terms of its actual evolution, the terms of that which we have called its third status, must necessarily be in appearance the very contradiction and opposite, but in fact the very fulfillment and transfiguration of its first forms of matter. And what is that? Why it is opposite? The first two statuses, affirming. First is affirming, second is expansion, but based on my own little selfish life. Third is to give, to love. So it looks like opposite. But that is the fulfillment, because that will complete its ascent toward the infinite. So many people would say such a person who is by nature giving, generous, will say you are a fool. You are a impractical person. They say such things. Not realizing that the person is the most practical person. Because slowly the struggle is getting off and he is in a state of inner rest. He is living in so many. See, that's the beauty. One immortalizes a creation, whatever one has done. One lives through, like a teacher lives in so many students and takes joy in that, isn't it? Lovely teachers here. So, because that's how it is. And it's not for money. When you don't do it for money, but for the joy of giving, how much it enhances the value of life. So it looks impractical to the so-called practical man, but is the wisest thing to do. So Sri Aurobindo says it looks as if it is opposite, but because life is seeking unity, few lines below, but unity is as strong a principle in nature as division. It is indeed the master principle of which division is only a subordinate term. See, it starts from unity and it goes into extreme fragmentation. And to the principle of unity, every divided form must therefore subordinate itself in one fashion or another. Last line we'll read on page 213, last paragraph. Not last paragraph, before that, because there's something. Therefore, if nature, for her own ends, in order principally to have a firm basis for her combinations and a fixed seat of forms, allows the atom ordinarily to resist the process of fusion by dissolution, she compels it to subserve the process of fusion by aggregation. The atom, as it is the first aggregate, is also the first basis of aggregate unities. You see, atom, it's difficult to split atom. It's a different thing that asuric forces have split the atom. It's the first basis. But what is more divine? Fuse the atom. So energy released by fusion. That's why nowadays we are moving towards fusion energy rather than fission energy. So atom has a tendency to come together and form molecules. That's how, you know, we read two hydrogen atoms and one oxygen atom gives birth to water. So this is the process that while atom is exercising its own individual form, it is also associating and forming aggregates. Same thing with us, that while there is a need to have our own individuality and preserve it, but at the same time, the larger impulse in nature is unity. And toward that, it inevitably moves. And it moves even after life is destroyed through so-called death. We have 5 minutes, so we can read. So all this vital energy, this is a great occult truth Sri Aurobindo is revealing, it is distributed. So very interesting. When life reaches its second status, that which we recognize as vitality, the contrary phenomena takes the lead, and the physical basis of the vital ego is obliged to consent to dissolution. That means the individual form. Its constituents are broken up so that the elements of one life can be used to enter into the elemental formation of other lives. That is the reason why some people mistakenly think that, you know, born as an animal. No, the soul is not born. But the life which is fragmented after death, supposing there is a strong tendency of greed, so that element can go into a goat, which is, or maybe a buffalo, and it will absorb for some time that element. But if the life has been organized, it can even continue for a long time on the plains, or that life can even scatter itself into countless minds and continue to influence. That's how some people with a strong mind continue to influence. Though they are dead, the idea their life embodied has not died. So it starts taking hold of other minds. So this is how evolution proceeds. The extent to which this law reigns in nature has not yet been fully recognized, and indeed cannot be until we have a science of mental life and spiritual existence as sound as our present science of physical life and the existence of matter. He says we have not yet understood this phenomena fully. So when people speak about rebirth, it's not necessarily rebirth. It's simply the life energy which has come out through an intense experience can enter into some receptive child who is open. And this child begins to recollect memories. And normally it is called past life. No, that's not past life memory. It has just taken hold of a brain and, you know, it fulfills sometimes itself. As we know, the famous case where a murder file was opened because the child said everything, how it was killed, who is his wife, who was the child, house, everything. So they were compelled to open the file and punish the murderers. It's not past life, but that life energy which has was strong formation after death. So it kept on. That's how sometimes even phenomena of haunting where, you know, it continues to circulate looking for something or someone to take grip of. So that's, there is a truth in all this, but Shrivindra says that to discover all this, there is to be a science. That science we still don't have. We see broadly that not only the elements of our physical body, but those of our subtler vital being, our life energy, our desire energy, our powers, strivings, passions enter both during our life and after our death into the life existence of others. See, very simple. Desire is so easy to understand. So if you go to a market just casually, don't go with the purse. Suddenly, because it's full of desires. Mother describes this in when she describes about Paris. She says, what an atmosphere it has. It's full of desires. She doesn't appreciate the atmosphere of Paris. We feel so, oh, we went to Paris. Somebody recently, going for darshan, coming out. Somebody told, on the darshan queue, suddenly from behind I hear a voice. I saw the Olympics. So, everybody saw the Olympics on TV. No, I saw the Olympics. So, first of all, you are in a different state and you don't know, you know. So, what's the big deal? No, I actually went to Paris and saw the Olympics. So, you know. And what does mother say about it? She says, it's such an atmosphere of desires. So, an evening in Paris is not a good idea. For that matter, in Delhi. And worse still, Kolkata. So, because Mumbai. Because that life is full of that and it's thrown out all around and it catches. Unless you are individualized, then no problem. If you are already aspiration, all this, nothing can touch us. But it enters. Why? Because you went to market with a friend. And then you end up, chalo, let's buy this. That's how Amazon and Flipkart know this truth, which we don't know. So now market is at the doorstep. You flip and the cart is there. Even if you have by mistake touched, it goes into the cart. You don't even know. They will keep reminding you. Something is lying in the cart. So once in my life, I had just to understand what it is. I said, what's lying in my cart? Somewhere you have by mistake touched. So that desire which, you know, keeps on haunting in that desire space. So he's revealing to us. And that's why when we are in the company of those full of desires and passions, we can get infected. Worse infection than having normal viral fever. And so with us, passions enter both during our life and after our death into the life existence of others. An ancient occult knowledge tells us that we have a vital frame as well as a physical. And this too is after death dissolves and lends itself to the constitution of other vital bodies. That means if we have really organized it well and lived a beautiful life, even after death, it's a gift. But if we have lived a life of all kind, then after death, it's a adds to the worsening of the situation of the world. So he speaks of this ancient knowledge. A similar law governs the mutual relations of a mental life with the mental life of other thinking creatures. There is a constant dissolution and dispersion and a reconstruction affected by the shock of mind upon mind with a constant interchange and fusion of elements. Interchange, intermixture and fusion of being with being is the very process of life, a law of its existence. So we see that you watch a video, they know it. All those things will keep coming at your doorstep. You watch a particular, even a short clip, it will keep coming to you. And even the promos, the advertisement will come of that kind. This is a truth which this AI has captured. It knows, it calls it algorithms and all, whatever it be. But it's applicable that people with whom we communicate spend day and night, something of their consciousness enters us and something of us enters into their consciousness. Unless, as I said, one is deeply rooted and totally centered in the divine. So we'll stop here and continue tomorrow.